Well, every year when we do the, the prep, we prepare for the school year, one of the key exercises is called class formation.
Mm-hmm.
And that is looking at, how many students there are in the different areas where we work. And then we set a ceiling of a number of students per class, which then leads to an average that is across the area. So I'll just give you the example recently in Gaza, where we were discussing which average we would reach at the end of this class formation exercise. In the past, it had been at 38 because of the financial pressures that we're under. So it is a challenge. It's a pressure. I was recently in Homs in Syria, where they said to me, we just have too many children per classroom. So I also said to them, we will look at measures to reduce the numbers. Because for us, it's also a concern in terms of the quality of the education.
You mentioned your visit to Syria. With whom did you meet there, and how was the outcome of your visit?
There were three primary purposes. One was with staff and refugees themselves, particularly after all the events of the summer. I wanted to hear from people how, what they had gone through, what they felt about the risk to education. I was, of course, also very pleased that we had been able to announce the opening of the school on time, but I was aware that they had gone through a lot of concerns and emotions. That was very good. I met many people in Damascus and in Homs. And then we had very open discussions about. And one of the things that struck me in the messages from refugees was how many of them are thinking about leaving Syria. And of course, there are already people that have gone to Lebanon and Jordan in the past. But now with the images of refugees from Syria arriving in Europe, I think more and more people are feeling that in the absence of any prospect for a political solution, in the face of so much devastating hardship that they face, as do many Syrians, of course, but now I'm focusing on Palestine refugees, that really it is worth taking the risk to try and leave the country. And you can see the pain in it, because for Palestine refugees, it is not the first displacement in their lives. Very often, of course, not only they reflect about what happened in 1948 or 67, but they remember that they lived in Yarmouk and already had to be displaced to another temporary location. And now they may have to be displaced further and leave and travel. I think this marks the community in its history, in its identity, in its collective consciousness in ways that we find sometimes, I think, individually very difficult to fully comprehend. So it's also a reminder that UNRWA, and I said to them, we are not just the provider of services. UNRWA is also the witness of their situation and of the historic injustice that was done to them. And that is something that we will carry forward. In addition to this, I met with senior officials in the Syrian government to discuss issues of access to certain areas of humanitarian activities, but also security for UNRWA staff, because we have lost a lot of people and much more has to be done to protect them.
Mr. Graham Ball, UNRWA is 65 years old. How much old do you think it will grow?
Well, this year indeed, at the beginning of the month of June, we had a commemoration here at the UN headquarters around that. And the message that I had at the time was, it was a moment of reflection, certainly not of celebration. A moment of reflection because, first of all, the very fact that UNRWA is 65 is precisely the reminder of the political issues that have not been resolved. And nothing is more important than to resolve them.